Baby, now you ready. Baby, now you ready.
Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. How are you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty stress-free Sunday after the Packers get a win earlier in the week, so it's hard to complain.
Absolutely. 24-21 regulation victory. That did look like it might go to overtime for a bit there, but yes, the undefeated Cardinals, no more. They fall, both the Cardinals and Packers at 7-1 now, with the Packers, again, 24-21 victory on Thursday Night Football. Week 8 is great so far, anyway.
Yeah, not much to complain about. A few injuries that we'll cover. That's not good, but overall, it was a gritty win. I'll give it that. It was a good team effort.
Is there any initial thoughts you want to start with? General thoughts about the game? Where do you want to start this discussion, Jesse?
We won in the trenches. That's where you win football games. You're going to be a lot of teams when you win in the trenches, and we kicked their butt in the trenches. I mean, you look at all the backups we had and the options we had catching the ball outside of running backs. And hey, we won up front. We punched them in the mouth and they made a nice little run at the end, but the Packers dominated that game. It should have been a bigger victory, but if you win by 1 or 100, it's a victory. And it was a great victory.
And I think like the trenches, certainly it with the offensive line, I think really it kind of made a difference. And I thought there were a lot of good runs by the running backs on their own, kind of fighting through contact, both Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. So I think kudos to them in particular. There's a lot of fought earned hard yards that were like, sometimes the difference of fighting through contact was a first down or not, or I think in Aaron Jones' case, a touchdown or not. And I think where the stat where it really shows, I think, is time of possession. I figured I hadn't actually looked at the final numbers. But I figured it was close to two-thirds, one-third, 37 minutes for the Packers, 22 minutes for the Cardinals. Almost 38 minutes for the Packers. So close to that two-thirds number in terms of time of possession. I think the first half, and certainly the second quarter, I think, was where it really happened. That one long drive the Packers had I think it started at the end of the first quarter, and then it went into the second quarter with the touchdown by Aaron Jones. But that drive took up that seemed like close to 8 minutes. Like, I think that was at least 7 minutes that it took up, and that's half a quarter right there in one drive that leads to points. It was as perfect of an offensive possession as you could have for the Packers, really.
Right. Two of our longest drives of the season actually were in this game. Just a great game plan with it. To bounce off what you said about the running backs, they ran hard. I mean, it was business decisions trying to tackle those guys because they were not going down easy. So, yeah, it was just they wanted it, right? You know, Aaron Rodgers kind of hinted at it. He's like, hey, we like being the underdogs. And no matter who we put out there, we expect to go out there and compete and win. And they did as a team. And it showed the Packers' mental toughness. It really did. This team could have went out there and it would have been an excuse. We're missing all these all pros we have and all this and poor us. And they didn't. They're battle hardened. The sky's the limit, right? You know, get guys back healthy. But it was just a good team effort.
Because we kind of hinted at it at the end of the episode on the preview with Ryan, but like Kyler Murray was the best quarterback the Packers have faced up to this point in the season, and they defended him perfectly. Honestly, like I thought, he didn't seem to run too much, but when he did, there was never any like massive games. He didn't just run up the 50 yards up the field. Like, you know, he got some first downs, but I thought they kept him in check. I think it seemed like Campbell at times was playing more of a spy role on Murray, and sometimes that worked. I think really one of my few complaints for the team, and again, maybe it's one of the more understandable things. We talked about it, the not just lack of players, but the lack of Joe Barry as well. So different defensive play caller. And what does that mean for the team? And I thought some of the schematic choices I didn't think were ideal. Now, it's also been problems they've had over the last couple of years anyway, so maybe Joe Barry would have done the same thing. A little too much off coverage, I found, especially on... Oh, gee, what was that guy's name? I wrote it down. Hang on. I had to write it down because I'd never heard of him before. Antoine Wesley, right? There was a play where it was Like it was like I think it was, it was only about a 4 yards to gain for the first down from the line of scrimmage, and I think it, they, I can't remember if it was Douglas or Stokes, but whoever it was, they were like 7 yards off of him. Like how is Antoine Wesley that type of threat where you feel like you have to be almost 10 yards back of the line of scrimmage just to defend against the deep threat? It was like an easy pitch and catch for a first down. Like things like that. I'm not sure why, specifically later in the game. And I guess we're not really going chronologically, but there's a, there was a touchdown run by James Connor. And on that play, they had Devondre Campbell as basically lined up almost like an outside linebacker stretched out. And I wonder, with how Murray had been running better to the outside, it seemed like he was doing it more. And this was, I think this was in the fourth quarter. So as the game went on, maybe they were thinking, okay, we need to get Campbell out there to defend against that. But what it also did, it left them totally vulnerable up the middle. You had Chris Barnes basically as a one inside linebacker, and he couldn't make the play. And Campbell, I mean, Campbell tried. He had pursuit on it, but like he was never in a position to be anywhere to make that play to stop Connor there. So a couple of schematic things defensively that I wasn't crazy about. But it, again, with the biggest turmoil on the team maybe being defensive coaching for this week in particular, that's maybe understandable.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had actually two different play calls. Yeah, Jerry Gray kind of calling at the line. And then I cannot remember the middle linebacker or the linebacker coach's name. Not Mike Smith, the other guy.
I'll look that up. But yeah, it seemed like he was the one going into Campbell's helmet. So that was also strange. Why do you think that is? Like my only thinking is that guy's already talking to Campbell anyway. So you want that familiar voice for Campbell. And like you want everyone talking to their main positional guy, so even though he was the main play caller, he would still have just been talking to his defensive back, so he'd probably been talking into one of his safeties, I would assume Amos, right? So I could see that of everyone just sticking everyone with their positional groups, but it did seem like that kind of makes an extra line of communication that stuff can get lost in translation. I wasn't crazy about that decision, honestly, but I mean, I'm not a coach, so I don't know what's easier, obviously.
Right. Your guess is as good as mine, because I thought that was weird, too. You'd think it'd be a little busy, but it kind of sounds to me, if I'm guessing, hey, go win your one-on-one and everything will take care of itself. You know, with the Kyler Murray, you know, slowing him down a little bit, everybody kind of stayed in their lanes and we got pressure from everybody. You know, that it took away where you look at the week before where, you know, even Rashawn Gary was crashing down really hard. And if the quarterback could get out of the pocket, you could run for days, right? Well, everybody kind of stayed home, which you have to do against, you know, a guy like Kyler Murray. And they did, and they took away a lot of his options. He still moved around the pocket really well, but he's still young too. And you get pressure on anybody in this league, things can happen. And they did great up front. All the communication stuff, I'm not even going to get into it because, like you're saying, I don't understand why they did it like that, but it worked. You know, a few soft coverages again, I kind of see it, or you didn't want to give up big plays, but like you said, it eventually you're going to have to start trusting your guys, and I think once we get a little bit more healthy, we can play a little bit more aggressive too, especially with our pass rush getting after guys. I mean, there should have been more than two turnovers in this game, honestly. We should have had a few more, so... it worked. It worked. Hey, high flying offense, and we held them to 21. I'll take it. And really, for three quarters, kind of shut them down.
By the way, the inside linebackers coach is Kirk Olivalt. I'm reading it. And I can't even say it. So I can understand why you forgot it. But Kirk Olivadalti, I believe, is how it's pronounced.
Anyway, you would say it better than me.
We can question it from the outside, but it seemed to work well. Like they seemed to make it, manage it well. So clearly it was the right call to make, because again, I guess Campbell's used to hearing Olivadotti's voice in his head, right? So maybe just that you keep everyone with the what they're used to hearing, as with as much turnover and turmoil and differences and new things that the Packers deal with, maybe the things that you could keep the same, you'd want to. So I could, again, obviously they made, like, Matt LaFleur is a smart guy, and Jerry Gray and this entire staff, like, they're all really smart. So if they chose to do it that way, they obviously had reasons to do it that way.
Right. I agree. And, you know, you're talking about Coach LaFleur being a smart guy. I mean, you could argue, you know, this is best regular season win easily, you know, short week, short staffed, missing a coach, you know, got to kind of do all this, missing all your players. And you come out against a really good football team and the game plan, you know, yeah, of course you want more points and all this, but it was really well planned. So the chips were stacked against him, and he made the right calls. You know, he trusted his staff and he trusted his players, you know, and that makes a good team.
I was actually going to pose that question. Is this the best Matt LaFleur win maybe ever? Like, just from a pure coaching perspective in terms of what he had to deal with going to this game and how well. I thought, you know, as much as I, you know, made some complaints about the defensive calling, I thought he called a perfect offensive game plan. Like, and every play call, every play design, the amount of motion that was used. And I do have theories about that. I maybe get to later on maybe why we're not seeing it at certain times. I was kind of going through it in my mind, just thinking about some things in preparation for this today. But I thought perfect game plan, perfect offensive play calling, and as good of a head coach a game as you could have. So yeah, I agree with you. I think this might be the best Matt LaFleur head coached game in Packers history. And I think by doing so, he's now the winningest head coach through 40 games in NFL history.
Winning percentage, yeah, but I think he's one win less. It's somewhere in there. Yeah, he's in the top two. I know that. I saw a few different things on it, but yeah, he's in good company. Let's put it that way. And you're right. It was for what he had to work with and having not putting too much on guys and everything. It was greatly called. You know, there's a few execution things, but it wasn't from a coaching standpoint. So playoff wins, I think, are a little bit different, even though, you know, the circumstances are different. But no question, greatest regular season win by far, just by far.
So I think one of the things that you had already mentioned, I wholeheartedly agree, is this was a full team win. Like this was a complete victory in all phases. And yeah, the offense controlled the ball for a ton of it. So the defense weren't so exposed to a ton of plays against Kyler Murray. Like, because that's one thing where if the Cardinals control the line of scrimmage and the game clock, and you've got Kyler Murray running around the field and the defense trying to chase him, that's where you could get that defense really tired. So I think it was smart, again, back to what I said earlier about smart offensive play calling. But yeah, I think from individual player efforts, those running backs, man, Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon, that was one of those where I felt, you know what, this is one of those games where you can't run too much for my liking. Right? Normally, as much as I love running backs in fantasy football, I'm especially with the pack, especially when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. I think I mentioned it. Which game was it? I can't remember which game, but where I felt like they just it was Washington. It was the previous game. They had too many early down, you know, first and 10 runs up the middle, right? Like that was, let Aaron Rodgers throw the ball. He's there for a reason, but this is one where the running backs are doing so well that I was like, no, keep it going. This is, much as I trust Aaron Rodgers, and I thought he played phenomenally, but the way those running backs were, again, pushing for extra yards seemingly every time, even if the O-line didn't block it well, both those guys were getting first downs consistently. So I thought, you know, you great running performances. You always start with the O-line first. I would almost say this was more the running backs than anything in this game, to be honest.
Yeah, I had a lot of both. I mean, you got to look at it. They were loading the box. They were daring us to pass because they didn't respect the receivers we had out there, which, you know, and that's a good game plan, right? I mean, they were going in there with 8-9-man boxes. You know, I don't care what you do. You got 5 blockers, maybe 6 if you have a tight end in. They're going to have some free guys in there. So, yeah, we were putting hat on hats, and our running backs were making the other guy, you know, make a decision and try to put him down. I mean, some of those plays, they were hitting the backfield, and they'd pick up a yard or two to pick up a first down. And even when they weren't hitting the backfield, A.J. Dillon was making guys miss. Like, everybody thinks he's just a straightforward north-south runner. He's got pretty good feet too, because he made a few moves and he was a little slippery to pick up some extra yardage. So the effort by both of those guys, it was amazing. Great running. I loved it too when they had them both in the backfield, where Dillon has a fullback and then you had Jones, and you can do the easy, like, you know, old school fullback dive. You know, Dillon picked up 6, and then you can do a little pitch or have Aaron Jones basically follow behind him. I mean, it was just old school power eye kind of football, because it was an offset power eye. It was nice.
And I also thought, I mean, Jones' usage, I mean, 100 yards from scrimmage, he had 11 targets. I knew he was going to be heavily targeted. He basically had double anyone else's targets. Juan Winfrey was second with 6 targets. That's an interesting, I wouldn't have expected that for him to be the number 2 on the team in targets. I would have expected Jones, honestly. That probably makes a lot of sense. We talked about this, like, the thing for the Cardinals to do might have been to try and shut down Randall Cobb. That's the guy that Rodgers is going to go to on key third downs in the red zone. And it seems like through the first half, he had nothing. I don't even think he had a target, because I think part of it was Buda Baker in the middle. And the Cardinals were just, like you said, they were also, I think part of the reason they were loading the box is because it could also let them control the middle of the field passing game as well, if they needed to drop guys out. So I thought, like, from a defensive game plan for the Cardinals, it actually made sense what they did. It's just, like you said, the Packers' O-line and running backs really controlled the line of scrimmages themselves. And just, you know, as much as the game plan was there, the Cardinals' defensive players just didn't execute as well as they were set up to.
Right, yeah. You know, the guys are winning their one-on-one matchup. Like you said, you know, I would have done the same thing if I'm Arizona. Hey, you got no-name guys out there, no offense to anybody, but, you know, outside of basically our pass catchers, nobody outside of Randall Cobb and, you know, St. Brown caught an NFL pass in a game. You know, Juwan Winfrey, the guy I loved in the preseason, you know, he shows that he can play a little bit, but he made a lot of mistakes too. I mean, he dropped some passes, ran some routes wrong. But, yeah, if I'm Arizona, I'm loading the box and I'm going to man up on guys on the outside and say, hey, try to beat this. And Green Bay did, you know, to their credit.
And I you know, kudos to the defensive play calling for Arizona. Not so kudos to the offensive side of that. I don't know. I've got a few issues with Cliff Kingsbury, honestly. I think one of the things, Kyler Murray, 6 rushing attempts. If you told me going to the game that Kyler Murray would only run the ball 6 times, I would say perfect. Because we do not want him running more than that. I mean, he ran more than James Conner, which I guess is one thing. But that's a weapon that they just... When they unleashed him and let him run to the outside later in the game, when they were kind of in hurry-up mode and needed to, it worked. And that was one of those, if that was something they started doing more earlier in the game, would they have gotten more first downs? Would that time of possession in the first half not have been so skewed to where it was, I think at one point it was legit double. And it was like late in the second quarter where Packers held like twice the amount of time possession as the Cardinals. Is that something where more first downs with Kyler running may have changed that? So I think just from a play call perspective, as simple as that, I thought there was some mistakes made, and then I can go further into more mistakes by Kingsbury. But what do you think of his offensive play calling in particular?
Kingsbury, you know, usually not this year so much, but like last year, a lot of the problems were he was playing like, you know, schoolyard ball. It was just basically, hey, Kyler, go out there, make a play. That only works for so long. You look at really Kyler Murray, they don't design a lot of just you're going to go run it. A lot of it is spread out the defense. If your first reader's 2 isn't there, take off running. Well, early in the game, they're playing, they weren't really in 3-4 wide. You know, they were playing a little tighter. And Green Bay was already showing they were slowing down things to the outside. So, like I said, everybody was staying in their lanes and staying home. Kind of changes what you want to do, especially if I'm a coach, I'm not running my quarterback. I'm sorry. It might look good. It might be fun. But in the long run, I'm not getting my franchise killed. That's just me, you know. And later in the game, yeah, you kind of got to do that. Or they spread them out. Green Bay's playing off a little bit. Yeah, that's where that guy can really kill you. But I'm not a big fan of Kingsbury and the play calling. But at the same time, I'm like, I get why they weren't trying to put him in harm's way early. Late, they kind of had to. But I don't know. I would have thought they would have tried to run it a lot more on early downs. That's one thing that I mean, their running backs were hitting at like over 5 yards a clip the last couple of weeks. And then, you know, Edmonds had 7 carries. Like I would have thought they would have tried to run it early on early downs, but hey, that's just me.
I also do wonder if the Packers forced the Cardinals out of that early just because, oh, okay, well, because we have so little time possession, we have to kind of make every snap count. So less running, more passing, which, to be fair, I'm in favor of, right? I feel like it's more efficient to pass the football than it is to run it. Not that you should be doing that every play, but like if you're not sure what to do, probably lean more towards a pass heavy approach. If you're unsure, unless the situation really calls, we really need to run the football here. Or if it's so obvious that you should pass, that's when you run because they'll never expect it. Like, oh, it's 2nd and 15. That might be a good time to run the football, right? That because they'll be expecting, you know, 2nd and long, they're going to try and pass to catch up, right? That like things like that, right? Whereas, again, the 1st and 10 running every time, I'm not so in favor of, unless I mean, unless they aren't stopping you, unless you're like gaining 6-7 yards a carry every time, then sure, just keep running. Why bother, right? So, but I felt like Edmonds and Connor were running well, right? So maybe they should have ran the football more. Maybe, again, maybe that would have, not so much running with Murray, but running with them, I mean, gaining first downs that way helps their time of possession.
Right. Well, and if I want to knock the defense, you know, the same problem we've been having, you know, the red zone defense, and it showed again this week. We get down to the red zone and then we're having a light box. Well, guess what? Then the running backs, I mean, just chewed us up the middle. You know, that's where Connor got his touchdowns, and it was pretty easy, right? When you have a really light box. But then when you're in between the 20s, we don't play like that, and you see us more in base, and it's working. We got to clean up this red zone defense. It just needs to be cleaned up. You know, the week before, yeah, they pitched a shutout in there, but there's still some issues. But yeah, I'm with you. You know, I see, you know, yeah, they're trying to pass it on early downs. Well, why wouldn't you? You know, they have a whole slew of weapons at wide receiver, and we're hurting at our cornerback spot. So they tried to attack it. We held up pretty well, you know, but like you said, it all comes down to the time of possession, that our offense can be your best defense at times. And we took away the clock from them, and maybe they did press. Maybe Kingsbury did get a little bit worried and was thinking, hey, we're only going to get so many possessions, you know, in a few key turnovers, you might make a guy press like that. So, hey, our coach outcoached their coach to a point.
Oh, I think he definitely outcoached Kingsbury. And tactically, I'll go beyond play calling, the end of the half, clock management. If with everything that was happening through two quarters where the Cardinals barely got the football, why wasn't he calling timeouts at the end to force the Packers to punt it away instead of take a Hail Mary chance and turn it over? Right, like that was one where you could just let the, okay, like, yeah, why not shoot for Hail Mary there at the end, right? Like you were able to drain the clock right down the end. You know, this is the last play. I mean, if they pick it off in the end zone, you better be able to tackle a guy 100 yards away and not let him score. Like that's inexcusable, even if you're an offense. But like, so that was perfect. But I don't understand why Arizona let Green Bay do that. They should have called a timeout, forced the punt, get the ball back. I know they got the ball back to start the second half, and I guess maybe they obviously were counting on that. But if possessions were such, and time of possession was such a rare commodity for Arizona in that first half, I don't understand how Kingsbury didn't do anything to help get them an extra possession at the end of the half there. Even if you do get, even if all you do is shoot a Hail Mary and it gets picked off in the end zone, at least you have that opportunity. So I thought horrible clock management from Kingsbury at the end of the second quarter.
I agree. It was like, it was kind of like a scared, oh, we're happy where we're at going to halftime. But like you're saying, hey, you're going to get the ball coming out of halftime. Why don't you try to get a 2-for-1 here and at least force them to punt it? You know, because what's the worst thing that can happen on that Hail Mary? Yeah, interception in the end zone, or we could, you know, you don't see a lot of pass interferences on that, but everything's in Green Bay's favor there, right? Clock goes out, you get a shot. Hey, maybe something good happens, right? I didn't understand that. They could have got the ball back with like a minute to go, especially on first down when they stuffed us. It's like, okay, we're going to have to kick it back to these dudes and they're going to get some momentum. And yeah, I agree. I didn't get it. I'm not upset that they didn't do that, but I didn't get it.
Yeah, I came a little off enraged. I was really happy that they messed up, but it's, I have my doubts about Cliff Kingsbury, honestly, coaching. I really do. I don't know that he's going to be able to coach that team to success. And I think what might happen this year is they might do well enough that they hang on to him. So this is one where I don't know how the Cardinals are getting out of this. Like their path to a Super Bowl, I don't see that happening. As much as they're 7-1 right now, I don't think this coaching staff's going to get them there. So sorry, any Cardinals fans listening, but I think, I don't know, unless this team can perform, like, could perform and win a championship in spite of that poor coaching. And I mean, poor coaching, I'm not talking like Matt Nagy, Adam Gase bad, but it's not like we said, Matt LaFleur clearly outcoached this guy in his own stadium on a short week where the Packers were the ones that had to do all the shuffling around coaching and not sure what receivers were playing. Even the day of the game, like, they weren't even sure if they were going to get Valdez-Scantling or not. I mean, I guess they probably knew. We didn't know. But like with all that uncertainty and Matt LaFleur very clearly outcoached Cliff Kingsbury, like that shouldn't happen for what the Cardinals' expectations are.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, even if we would have lost this game, you know, when we went into it, what we say, I wanted to see them be competitive, and I thought they would be. But, you know, there's some really concerns on this Cardinals team, and it's winning in the trenches, right? I mean, that they have the weapons. I think they're loaded at receiver. They have two capable running backs. They have a great future, awesome, longtime quarterback. You know, they have some talent on defense. But like you said, you know, in the trenches and some coaching errors, that's going to get you beat in the playoffs. It just will, you know, and like you said, anything can happen. It's a long season. We're only getting to the halfway point here. But yeah, I think teams are going to, they're getting more and more tape each week, and they're seeing some of these holes in teams, you know. I don't want to say the Cardinals peak too soon, you know, that doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I think there's spots that you can expose them. And one is coaching. It really is.
I mean, I don't think it's wrong to say they peak too soon. It seems like that's what happened last year. I mean, they were off to a very similar start and missed the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, they lost like 7 in a row or something. It was crazy. Or 6 in a row, yeah.
And I mean, yeah, I think one of their last wins of the season was that Kyler Murray Hail Mary against the Bills. So that was like halfway through the season. And, you know, it's funny how that game, I thought like game of the year when I saw that game actually mean nothing. Right. I mean, the Bills, in spite of losing that game, still made it to the AFC championship game. And I don't think winning that game would have given them home field in that game. So like that was, they were always going to be the number two seed. It didn't affect it at all. And winning that game didn't get the Cardinals in the playoffs. So it's funny how like that game seemed like it was going to be super important. And then actually, I mean, every game matters, but like that result didn't change anything.
It's a funny league, isn't it? I will say, though, for hating Thursday night games, that was probably the greatest Thursday night game ever.
Yeah, that may be. I mean, we've had actually quite a few good ones this year, but yeah, I think that certainly has to be up there. And I know, so the Thursday night hatred, and I think this is unfortunate. This is, I think I know why. And as soon as this happened, like, okay, this is just Jesse's going to point to it too. And not to say that this wouldn't have happened if this was on a Sunday, but this is one where, yeah, okay, why, a little weird. It's injuries, right? Like players, short week, the chance of re-injury, especially on the non-contact injuries, we're quite worried for, right? So I guess this is where we talk about Robert Tonyan.
Yep. And you're right. You know, I mean, Devondre Campbell came out too, you know, before the game. He's like, I'm an old man now. It takes me 5 or 6 days to start feeling normal after a Sunday game. You know, it's hard on these guys, right? You know, in a short week, we didn't practice this week, and it was a non-contact injury, which I've heard a lot of people say that turf there in Arizona is really unforgiving, and you see these kind of injuries. So for a multi-billion dollar league, why can't we get some of these fields better? That's a whole nother subject. But yeah, Tonyan going down, I hate to see it. It's just – What a great story and a cool guy and a big part of this team, and now he's lost, and who knows what his future is with us. So
even with the Packers, like I'm concerned for his NFL future. Like this is, I mean, he's about to be a free agent, right? So there's nothing like guaranteed the rest for him the rest of the way. Like he's gonna have to fight back, and hopefully he does. I don't know if this helps get the Packers were able to get him cheaper because no one's really going to want. I guess we didn't really specify what the injury was, but he tore his ACL. I don't know if you mentioned it and I missed it, but that has been officially diagnosed now, and we know for sure torn ACL, out for the season for Tonyan. And yeah, really unfortunate for him. And yeah, this is, you know, questionable future in the NFL from now on. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, restricted free agent. I believe undrafted free agent, like he hasn't really made the big bucks yet. That this contract this year would have been the best he had made, and it was, you know, nice, you know, couple million dollar payday. But like, there's, I think he, like, just NFL players' history with ACLs returning, I think he'll be able to come back and be fine. But it's, does any team believe that? That's where I'm more concerned with right now. So I'm not even really worried about the Packers. I'm more just worried about Tonyan at this point.
Right. I mean, I could, you know, that's the least of his concerns right now. You know, let's hope he gets back better. But yeah, you know, if he's, I could see him getting a prove it deal again next year. Cause you know, hey, you know, he's not going to get that contract where, you know, if he got hot here, he might've got a nice, you know, multi-year contract. Cause he is a weapon in the passing game. Like let's call it what it is. The guy's sure handed. He makes plays. He was having a heck of a game. His best game of the year so far, you know, big play, his biggest play of the year, basically. And you know, I'm sure he'll get a prove it deal next year, but like you're saying, yeah, you know, that it really puts his future in jeopardy. So I hope he comes back. I hope he can have, you know, a long career going forward, but it's just unfortunate.
I think especially if like the Packers can't find an answer at tight end without him, You know, if because now it's going to be on Josiah DeGuara to really be that downfield move tight end. Maybe or maybe it's Dominic Daphne, right? Like it's kind of, I guess, on those two to kind of fill that role, because we know who Mercedes Lewis is. We know what he's going to do. Maybe this means more targets for him. I still think he can give enough vertically for, considering his age as well. But this really does seem like, you know, I think especially for Daphne, this could be a huge opportunity to kind of maybe do what Tonyan did, right? Get a nice bigger payday than what's expected. I don't know if Daphne's in a contract year or not, but it kind of similar to what Tonyan did, right? Like, I mean, it might be there for Daphne to have that opportunity. So we'll see kind of how that goes, happens moving forward. But if they can't find an answer, it probably means the Packers will bring Tonyan back and willing to maybe even overspend to make sure they get him. Again, I don't know how many other teams they're bidding against. I could see a lot of teams thinking, especially not having them in their buildings, oh, everything he's done is just because he's with Aaron Rodgers, right? Not because of his own athletic ability, his ability to, you know, from the tight end position to really get downfield a lot more effectively than a lot of them, a lot of other tight ends. So those things may not be lost on other teams. So, yeah, we might see Tonyan back with green and gold next year, but I mean, there's no guarantee of that. There's no guarantee of anything at this point for him. So again, thinking about Tonyan, and it's the Packers. They won this game without Adams, so they'll have to kind of keep winning the rest of the season without Tonyan.
Right, and you know, like you're saying with Daphne and DeGuara, you know, I don't think one person is going to fill that role by themselves. I think it's going to take both of them, you know, and both of them, you know, had really good blocks in the game. DeGuara had a catch. He dropped a ball, too. And Rodgers on that goal line play where he burned the timeout, you know, he said it. If DeGuara was lined up right, that he's like, that's a walk-in touchdown, 100 out of 100, we had a touchdown there. So these guys, and I get it, you know, they're playing now from more of an H-back position. Hey, now you have to play tight end, you know, and there was that mental brain fart right there. So these guys got 10 days to kind of figure it out, and I see them both kind of sharing the load. Of course, there's rumors out there, hey, maybe Green Bay will go after Evan Ingram's being shopped and stuff like that. You know, we'll cross that bridge if they get there. You know, they have, you know, this next week to look at it till Tuesday. But yeah, I think both those guys can fill the shoes a little bit, but it's not going to be the same.
I've also heard the Ebron rumors, the Ingram rumors, another EE, just that initials, but Eric Ebron, I've heard of that as well, of maybe being an option. I don't even know which one I'd prefer between those two, to be honest. I lean towards Ebron just because it seems like there's a lot of lack of reliability on Ingram. Like the athleticism is there, but you know, catching the football stuff, even just staying healthy, right? So I feel like I'd rather have Ebron, but I'd welcome a trade for either, to be honest. I don't know that either's gonna go for very much on the trade market. Like, they're not, like last year talked about Will Fuller, right? Like, oh, they have to give up a second or third. Like, I don't even think either of those tight ends command a third. Like, this, you know, give up a fourth, fifth, that, you know, for a player that can come on and start for the Packers, I'm fine with that. So we'll see if they do end up in the next couple days. I guess by the time we do the preview for the next game, we'll know if they have traded for a tight end or not.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just say with Ingram, that's a boom or bust, right? Like all the left, that guy's a pure pass catcher, you know, stretch the field, but staying healthy in the drops and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it's, hey, if you're going all in, you can get him for a fifth. What the heck? Go for it. But yeah, like you said, probably Wednesday or something, we'll have more answers on this.
We haven't really talked much about the Packers defense, which, to be fair, again, most of that game was the Packers offense on the field, not the defense. We've touched on a few things defensively, but what I want to touch on, I guess I hinted at it a bit with the off coverage, but is the secondary in general. I guess maybe, I don't know if you'd sensed this before game, but I kind of felt, was this Stokes' worst game as a pro? It certainly felt like, and I mean, that's tough for corners to even judge, because like just being on the field and lining up against a great receiver, that already is indicative of you being skillful enough and doing enough well to be out there. So like, of course, the games where he's starting and is kind of forced to go up against guys like DeAndre Hopkins, he's going to be more exposed. But it seems like not even just against Hopkins, like it seems like he kind of struggled a little bit at tracking receivers in general. So I don't know if maybe that's why they did so much off coverage to let him be in front of everything. What did you think about Stokes?
Yeah, well, you saw rookie mistakes, and then you saw him. I thought he played well on other ones. Yeah, Hopkins, I've never seen anybody do that move before on that long play. Listen, that was a prayer that Murray threw up there. He keeps throwing those up. They're gonna start getting picked. But wow, did Hopkins make him look bad? I mean, a future Hall of Famer kind of picked on the kid there. Great play, right? Just a great play. But yeah, he took his lumps at times, but then at other times I thought he competed well. Yeah, like you said, it's kind of hard to say if it's his worst game or not, but he's still kind of learning. I don't know. He was tight in some coverages, and then some of them, it's like, he kind of got lost. Maybe he was overthinking, you know, the guys he was playing against are, you know, so I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I'm not too worried about him. I'm really not. You know, you're going to get this out of a rookie. How many rookie cornerbacks can you really trust? And I trust him. I really do. And we're only going to get healthier.
And not that it was always Hopkins, but like Hopkins can make veteran pro all pro cornerbacks look silly times too. And so of course he can kind of do that to a rookie.
And that's what it is. I mean, we lined him up. Hey kid, go play against this guy. You know, this guy's going to be getting a jacket someday, you know, and you're going to have that.
And I mean, to Kyler Murray's credit, like throwing up those quote unquote 50-50 balls to Hopkins one-on-one, they're kind of more like 70-30 balls, really. I mean, he's really the only guy that I think you can make the argument for is better wide receiver than Davante Adams. And so Stokes, if you had to practice against Adams, that's kind of preparing you to cover Hopkins, I guess.
Yeah, right. I mean, you go against the best and you're gonna perform. So he's only gonna get better. Like I like his mindset where, you know, a lot of corners, you know, we have a few on the team that make that mistake and you can break them in the rest of the game. They're going to be doubting themselves. Stokes, on the other hand, when he makes a mistake, his mental fortitude, he's right back there competing and he doesn't make it again. So, hey, it happened once. He's going to learn from it.
Rasul Douglas seemed like the better corner this game. Like where it hadn't in previous games, like it still seemed like Stokes was the better guy. But in this game, it seems like Douglas was... I thought he played phenomenally, and I mean, he was targeted a lot. Like they, you know, clearly the plan was, okay, you know, without Alexander King, we're going to go after these corners on the outside. We're not going to try to go too much to the middle. Amos and Savage are looming large there. So I think in that sense, I mean, I was criticizing Kingsbury earlier, but I don't know if this is all from Kingsbury, if this is Murray's recognition, but to target the perimeter receivers as much as they did, that was a smart move. Like that's tactically how they should have approached it. But yeah, I thought Douglas played great.
He had a game, man, and what a great story, too. You know, we plucked him off of their practice squad, and he comes back, and, I mean, he had a game. Pass break, that tic-tac-y PI, yeah, I didn't like that. But other than that, like, the dude was great. He led the team in tackles, pass breakups, and then the game sealer. What a game. What a nice addition and add to this team.
Yeah, great interception at the end to kind of to win the game, really. That could have easily gone to overtime, like I mentioned earlier, right? They could have kicked a field goal there. Heck, they might have scored a touchdown and just won the game outright. And then we're talking about a loss here for the Packers, not a win. So way to just take that game from them at the end. It was kind of stunning a little bit. Didn't expect that to be the ending of that game there. So way to go, Rasul Douglas. Love the NFL for stuff like that. You never know what's going to happen.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he just showed up. I mean, and this is a guy that, you know, started 15 games for Carolina. You know, it's just, I think it's a scheme fit, and I think he fits nice. He's a bigger cornerback where he can kind of bully guys a little bit and play his own game. I like him. I think it's a great fit. Aaron Rodgers says he fits in the locker room great. He was a great interview after the game. He's just a fun dude all around, I think.
And like you said, the story of him being poached off the Cardinals practice squad, that's got to be nice for him to you know, you guys should have brought me onto your team. great for Douglas.
I agree.
Okay, so you said it was the best Thursday night football game. I don't know if, I mean, I guess it's always the same crew. I don't know. Do you get Prime? Like, do you get access to any of the alternate broadcasting crew? Because, man, not having to listen to Buck and Aikman was great. I got to say, that was awesome. That made everything so much better. I wouldn't have even been that upset if the Packers lost. The Packers lose, I got to listen to those two. Then I'm really mad. But no, but obviously I would want the Packers to win. But yeah, that was great listening to the alternate broadcast. I don't know if you were forced to. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I watched it on Prime, but I had them, so.
I got to say, Andrew Kramer, Hannah Storm, I think they're great. All I've been kind of avoiding Thursday night footballs. I curl a lot on Thursdays. I'm usually, okay, check the fantasy lineups and then just kind of relax for a bit, not really worry about football too much. But now that I'm pretty sure Prime has all the games the rest of the way, not that I'm trying to give an advertisement here, but like, I'm maybe going to watch more Thursday night football if it's listening to those two. I think they were fantastic.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not the biggest Thursday night person, but yeah, if I'm not doing something, I'm watching it. So, you know, I kind of second rule what I say, but yeah, it is what it is. And yeah, I also watch on Prime. So
I think everyone should have access. I don't think it's just a Canadian thing. I know it's a little tricky to find it, but I think you got to go, you play the broadcast. And then it's either in the subtitles or the languages, you go to change it there, and that's where you can change crews. So just because I really don't like those two, I know you kind of agree with me there, Jesse. Like I am sincerely recommending to you and to everyone else to listen to Andrew Kramer and Hannah Storm. They're fantastic.
I'll jump onto it next week for sure.
Okay, so, and of course, we keep it at the end of the episode. We talk about, you know, complete team win, right? Offense, defense. I mean, special teams wasn't a liability, but I also thought they didn't really play great. I mean, Bohorquez is punting like crazy. That one bad punt a couple weeks ago seems like a total aberration. Like it's never going to happen again. He's been fantastic. He's probably their best special teams player, him or Crosby, really, which I guess we're kind of used to the kickers being the better special teams players, unfortunately. But, you know, no massive returns for the Cardinals, which is nice. But also, I mean, not really any good returns for the Packers. But I've kind of come up with some kind of coaching things, and I hinted at one earlier for the offensively for LaFleur, and I'll touch on that. But we talked about injuries, and this one kind of broke my heart because I actually like both of these players, and they're both running backs. So, you know, like NFL teams will try and screw them over as much as possible in terms of paying them as little as possible. So on the special teams play, Kylan Hill takes the ball out of the end zone. Which, again, we know is never a good thing. If you're in the end zone, just kneel down, right? I don't know if that's coaching or not, but Kylan Hill goes out, gets hit in the knee. I don't know if it's an ACL tear. I don't know if they've confirmed exactly what it is, but he's out for the season. And then Jonathan Ward, who tackled him, knocked himself out on the tackle. Again, still, as much as they've tried to make special teams safer, it still shows that it's still a violent aspect to the game where large speeds, guys hitting each other really fast. And so I just hope both of those players are okay long term. I like talent wise both those running backs. I thought that they, you know, great to be NFL talents, but also you don't want to see anyone get hurt, even if it's players you don't think are that talented, right? So, but like, I don't know, just knowing that their positions are running backs and teams are always gonna try and shortchange them, it really sucks to have them miss time, because it's gonna, like, you know, teams are gonna use that against them eventually. And obviously losing our, you know, the Packers starting kick returner for the year, that's not good. Obviously, that's something that needs to be addressed, because I don't think Amari Rodgers has been doing that great on punt returns. I almost wondered, are we going to start seeing Kylan Hill return both? Obviously, now we won't get any of that. So again, thoughts are to Kylan Hill, but is this coaching? Are they not being coached to kneel down the end zone, or was that just Kylan Hill's decision? I think I can see it. I think I've got the lane. I'll take it. You can't blame players for going with their instincts, but man, you got to just kneel down when you're in the end zone. Because if it's not, it's really unfortunate that the coaching staff put that player in that position doing that, right? Like, it's really, to me, if you catch the ball on a kickoff in the end zone, just kneel down. This isn't the CFL. You're not giving up a point. Just kneel down.
Yeah, again, Kylan Hill, you know, hopefully he can heal, because that looked nasty for both players. It was a train wreck, right? So hopefully he can bounce back. He's a young guy, come back. But yeah, it's a big blow, first of all. He's a good special teamers, and the way Amari Rodgers he's not there yet. He could have probably took over both, but I don't know. That's a tough one. You know, I'm sure there's some kind of coaching involved, because you'd think, hey, if you're in the end zone, just let's start at the 25, you know, just start at the 25. Right. But maybe, you know, he saw something, wanted to make a play. I don't know. So my answer to that, I don't know, but you would think in this day and age with all the balls, just start at the 25, just start at the darn 25. Nothing bad can happen from a touchback, right? You know, a lot of bad things can happen from taking the ball out. And unfortunately, we saw two players get hurt. And for what? You know, he didn't get to the 25. So
I think he barely passed the 10. Like, I think the Packers started at their own 11 or 12 yard line. Like, it really tactically wasn't a good move. And then obviously the injury is what we're really concerned with. And, it, you know, really hope for Kylan Hill and Jonathan Ward to long term be okay. But I don't know if they're going to be forced to use Amari Rodgers on both. I kind of wonder. I don't think Tyler Irvin signed anywhere. Like, legitimately, do the Packers ring him up and bring him back? And you're the main returner now. And let's, you know, maybe incorporate Amari Rodgers more through the offense, but let him kind of work at punt returning before constantly making him do it. Is that something? I don't know.
I think it is, if you look at it, because, yeah, we got guys coming. So we're talking about all the doom and gloom. On a positive note, we should be seeing some players starting to come back now. You know, we should get maybe Bach back next week. We're going to get Adams back next week. So some guy, there's probably going to be one or two roster spots open for new faces, right? So, yeah, that'd be something to kick the tires on, where you tell Tyler Irvin, hey, you know, that's what he's good at. Come on in. You know, I don't know if he's on a roster. I don't think he is. I haven't looked it up, but it's going to be a position where I think you're looking for a guy. You know, you're going to need another running back regardless, right? We can't just go with two. So I don't know if you bring up a practice squad or if you kick the tires on somebody, but you're going to probably see a new face in Green Bay coming up in the next, you know, week.
I'm not seeing, like, I don't even think he's on a practice squad, Irving. I think he's just out there as a street free agent right now. So I expect to hear about him signing with the Packers this week. Honestly, I think he did well returning last year for them. And I think, you know, Kylan Hill had been playing well through this year. So obviously, you know, trusting those two young guys, Rodgers and Hill, to do it. Okay, we want to invest in them, but now they really don't have a choice. And Irving also fills the role of, the Packers don't have a third running back on roster. Irvin would fill that. Not quite the same. Like, I think Kylan Hill's a much better runner than Irving, just a pure running back runner. We've seen him whenever he's gotten handoffs. It hasn't always been amazing, but Hill's got that same thing we just mentioned that works so well for Dylan and Jones, the fighting through contact. That's, to me, his contact balance and power, being able to power through players. That was what I really liked with Kylan Hill's tape, and was hoping to kind of see that. That's not Irvin at all. Irvin's a completely different type of runner, but that same type of speed as Hill and athleticism. So at least come on the roster as a third running back, but mostly as that returner. So again, we'll see if Irvin gets signed. Maybe there's other players that the Packers have in mind as well. But yeah, just knowing that he's out there and they can just call him up and grab him. The way that they've been just getting free agent players that are being cut, like, you got to think this one's going to be easy to convince him, right? But they were able to convince Jalen Smith and who else? Merciless. Whitney Merciless.
We had a good game, by the way. Yeah, he had a great game.
Anyway, so convincing those guys, like, it's worked. So I feel like they should be able to easily convince Tyler Irvin, who doesn't have a job right now, to come take this job, right? So we'll see. We'll see if that happens.
Right. I mean, they're always looking, right? So I'm sure there's going to be contact. Now, what happens, happens. But again, that'll be something to talk about this week.
Yeah, I think we talked about everything that I wanted to in terms of topics. Get to Packers prime performer. Or were there any other things you wanted to mention before we get there, Jesse?
No, I think we hit everything on the head. I think we already kind of agreed on our guy, too. But who are you thinking?
Well, I think if we... It's Packers prime performer. We didn't specify player, and that's maybe the only reason why I think it might be a discussion. Going into this, and before I really looked at it, my answer was actually going to be Matt LaFleur, just because I was actually going to pose you the question at this point to ask that. Was this the best game he's ever coached? We've already agreed on that. I would maybe consider it him, but I think if it's any player, and the fact that he led the team in tackles is kind of like... As we've talked more, I'm kind of going more of, okay, maybe we do actually name Rasul Douglas as the Packers' prime performer for this week, because he did have a tremendous game and a clutch game at like, you know, on a really nice looking interception too. Like, that was, you know, not quite as nice as the non catch that Mercedes Lewis made in the end zone. That was a beauty of a catch. If only he got that second foot in bounds, man, that would have been amazing. But it still looked really nice, but also important, because it won them the game. It ended the game, gave the Packers a win, right? And obviously you needed the score, the 24 points, to get the lead at that point for have an interception in the end zone count, give you the win. But yeah, I think there's a strong case for Douglas, and if the only case against him would really be went with the coach and said we gave it to Matt LaFleur. So I don't know what your thoughts are. Do we stick just with players, or do we get really weird here?
I mean, you can make the call, because if we're doing just through the organization, yeah, it's Matt LaFleur. I mean, what a great call. But if we're just doing players, there's no argument on the player. I mean, with the story coming back against his former team 2 weeks ago, then sealing the deal, but not just that interception. He had a heck of a game. I mean, he led the team in tackles, had a few pass breakups, was sticky coverage all day. I mean, it's a no brainer for me there, but I'll let you decide if we want to do coaching staff too, because I would agree if we're doing that.
It's tricky because I think ultimately, if you look at like what aspect won the Packers the game, I think it's the time of possession. It's the offense. And yeah, you can go to the running backs, but I already mentioned it, the offensive play calling. But part of me also thinks, like, with Douglas, right? Like, this is probably the only chance we're ever going to have to really give it to him. Like, unless Alexander really can't get healthy and Douglas, maybe he plays so well that he just stays in the starting lineup the rest of the year anyway. But I'm kind of thinking we just go with the player, as much as like part of my instinct is, oh, let's get cute with the coach. But yeah, let's give it to Rasul Douglas. I think he earned it.
Sounds like a win to me. And yeah, I guess one thing with that, you know, even if, when Jair does come back, that gives us such much more to play with, where Jair can either follow a guy or go in the slot. And the way Douglas is playing, if he continues to play like that, wow. I mean, this defense can really come on, you know, and now Z wanting to come back, hinting that he might be getting close. We'll talk about it next week, but it's looking pretty good for us right now.
Yeah, I think, again, there'll be some really tough questions to answer, I think, on the offensive line and in the secondary now when players get healthy. There's suddenly so much depth there. It's who isn't starting? Like, who gets the unfortunate nod to be on the bench to start games? And I think, I don't know, I may have some answers for both. I guess we can continue to address it as, you know, next episode we'll probably know who will be active, inactive, or at least get chances at that for the Thursday games. We'll have kind of better ideas on those injuries. So no more Thursday games. I mean, I'm sorry, Jess. I didn't mean to say Thursday game. There's no more of that. And luckily, that's the only one we've had this year, I'm pretty sure. So no more Thursday night football for the Packers. But again, got the win here, 24-21 against the Cardinals. And the Packers are now tied at the top of the NFC, right? I think there's a few 6-1 teams in the NFC, Rams, Cardinals, Packers,
Buccaneers,
right, of course, yeah. How'd I forget them?
That's the boogeyman still.
Well, yeah, it is, right? And as much as, like, I'm probably feeling more confident now the Packers being able to win the Super Bowl than I have at any point this season. Like, this to me was maybe the toughest test, you know, for a lot of different reasons thus far, and they passed it. It was close, and, you know, and I think that's the margin of victory when we're talking about the top-tier teams in the NFL. But they passed, and that's kind of what really matters. 7-game win streak now. And, you know, to their credit, like, as much as the Buccaneers, the regular season game, they just mopped the floor at the Packers. It wasn't even close. I mean, it was close to start. Like, the Packers actually had a lead in that game, and then just, you know, a couple of quick interceptions really just turned the tide, and then they couldn't come back at all. But, I mean, the playoff game, they almost won. They maybe could have won. If David Bakhtiari is in that game, I kind of think they do win. I think just through not on one play in particular, but the extra protection throughout the game maybe leads to better passes, better plays. Maybe they were able to get the end zone one extra time instead of a field goal. I don't know. I just feel they were really close. So it's not that they can't. I don't get the same dread that, like, say, the 49ers a couple years ago, right? Like, that's one where I don't know if the Packers could ever beat that iteration of that team. I don't know if that iteration of that 49ers team ever exists again, though. Like, maybe losing to Forrest Buckner actually was kind of a really key important piece that the Colts really couldn't overpay to get, right? Like, they paid a lot, and it still seems like it's a great value, right? Like, they could have paid him an extra $5 million per year more, and we'd still be saying it wasn't an overpay. And then an extra $10 million per year more, and maybe that's an overpay at that point. But the elite teams, I get the sense the Packers can hang with them. So
We are one of them.
Well, yeah, yes, for sure. No, I think you're right. Of course.
No, but I agree with you. Yeah, you know, there's parity in this league for a reason. And when you talk about that San Francisco team, that was a matchup that you're right. We just didn't match up with it. We couldn't stop them, and we couldn't stop the run that year. And guess what? They didn't. They just made it. They proved that point. But yeah, you're right. You know, I still think, you know, Tampa Bay is the team to beat because they play good in the trenches, which Arizona doesn't. And that's why Arizona just doesn't scare me that way. But Tampa Bay, they play good in the trenches. So that's the marquee matchup. But to say that they're better than us, I don't think they're better than us last year. Yeah, they beat us twice, so yeah, you can say that. But we're in that game. We're with them. We can play with that team. It's going to be a dogfight. We got to get there first. Like you said, I agree. They're not San Francisco where it's like, man, there's no way we beat this team unless they just shoot themselves in the foot. With Tampa Bay, that's a matchup. We're right there with them.
I will say, I think I'm like, if you ask me right now who's the best team in the NFL, I think I'd say the Bucs. And from last, if you ask me, like, retrospectively, who was the best team in 2020, how can you not say the Buccaneers? They won the Super Bowl, right? But I don't think they're, certainly not this year, and even last year, really, I don't think they're a tier above everyone else. It's not like they're a tier in their own, and then it's the rest of the league. Like, they're the best team in the top tier. So then it comes down to who executes on game day the best. And again, for this Thursday night game, it was the Packers. So if you have any added comments, I know we did long for a recap episode, but if there's anything we missed, if somehow I happen to miss it, feel free to let us know on Twitter at @FBC_Packers. You can also follow your co-host individually. Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app. It's available for free on Android and iOS stores. Gives you access to all of the Full Press Coverage content in one convenient location. So, download the Full Press Coverage app for free today. Shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at @PA_IIOfficial. Let's use the song Nah You as our intro and outro music. And as we get to the outro, Jesse, any final thoughts?
Hey, enjoy the rest of the week. We should see some healthier faces coming back to Green Bay, and go Pack go.
Absolutely. Talk about top tier teams and elite tests. I think they have another one that we'll talk about next time on the Full Press Packers Pod.